Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, welcome to In the Pink, sponsored by Bose. Stay home, stay healthy, stay connected.
Something else that we've got to look forward to next year, other than Checo in a Red Bull, is Mick Schumacher coming onto the grid in a Haas. How do you feel about your old adversary's son joining Formula One?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. Obviously, I wasn't a particularly big fan of his dad's. For whatever reason, you know, Michael was quite hard to love as a driver. I mean, unless you're German, you know, he was a god, living god, still is in Germany. But as a competitor, he made life quite difficult, and he didn't give any kind of hint that, you know, there was any love there at all. So he's quite a tough customer. But obviously the story that's unfolded since he retired and his accident and skiing with his son and stuff like that, you know, it's an absolutely awful, tragic story. And it's another one of those uplifting stories, really, that Mick's come back and he wants to be a racing driver, and he's clearly talented. And I think there'll be a lot of people wanting him to do well and wanting to see his personality. I mean, it's a difficult thing. I've seen some of his moves. Some people have already compared him to Michael in some of his.
What do you think?
He's quite aggressive. Well, I only saw a little bit, but he defended himself quite vigorously in Abu Dhabi, didn't he? When they were trying to queue up for qualifying and stuff like that. So, but he seems like a nice kid. I've met him. But these people are competitors naturally. You've met enough of them now. You know, they can have a lovely smiley face, but, you know, you put them in a competition and they turn into killers. So
yeah,
that's what they're like.
Assassins, exactly. Yeah. I'm interested, though, in this idea of fathers and sons. And I wanted to ask you whether you thought you would have been a Formula One driver had it not been for your dad.
Well, I honestly think if my dad had lived, I probably would not have been a racing driver. I would have certainly loved racing bikes, but, you know, he probably would have said, "You're not racing bikes." You know, I mean, who would want any of their children to go and race a bike? It was, you know, I didn't have anyone when I was, so from the age of 15, I had no dad around me to tell me what to do. So I just was a free agent. I did what I liked. And my poor mom was probably a bit anxious about me racing bikes. But, you know, I love my bikes. You see, there's a picture of me. I don't know if you can see that one. I'll show you that one.
Yeah, that is.
That's a picture of me when I was a bit younger. Riding a bike, no helmet, of course. You know, but my dad, he did motocross and stuff. So, and my grandma rode a motorbike. So we're going to talk about the influence of you know, genes and where it all comes from, and women not getting enough appreciation for their input. Then you'd have to say my grandma was the first person in our family to really get on motorized vehicles. So she might have produced two world champions. She did produce two world champions. I got a fabulous picture of her with after the First World War, she's got gauntlets on and jodhpurs. It's like flying, you know, you wear those kind of wide trousers and on some old AJS or something like that. And my granddad, my dad's dad, never drove a car at all in his life. So it didn't come from him.
That's crazy. But you've got a competitive streak in you from your mum as well. She was a high-performing athlete, wasn't she?
She was more famous than my dad when they first met. So there's an article with introducing Graham Hill to motorsport. Someone's written an article, and they say there's this chap, Graham Hill, who turned up in the Lotus, and he's married to the famous oarswoman, Betty Hill, or Betty Shoebrook, as she was then. So she rode for England in the eights. And yeah, she was a strapping woman. She with, you know, plenty of power in her legs. And so she was probably one of added a bit of horsepower there.
That's great. So just going back to your decision. Well, first of all, to compare your love for two wheels to those of four. You did make the decision to make the switch. But instinctively, did you want to stay on bikes?
Yeah, but it wasn't going to be a career, you know, and I was one of these kids, you know, like a lot of the drivers you will have spoken to, when they got it in their head, they wanted to go racing. They didn't want to do anything else. They had everything else seemed very dull and unattractive. And so it was racing for me. And I thought, well, if someone's going to pay for me to, you know, get a drive and take care of all that and help me get a seat, then maybe I shouldn't, you know, what's the point of persevering with the bikes? Because it's almost certain you're going to break your legs and break your arms. I've already got a broken collarbone and a broken wrist. But it was a kind of pragmatic decision. And there was this momentum that built up, and someone suggested it to my mum that they could, a guy who ran Brands Hatch said, well, I can get him in a car. Let's see what he's like. And I sort of half-heartedly went for it. And thought, oh God, what is this? What have I got myself into here? And I absolutely hated it because I was rubbish and I was last and I hated that. And so the competitive side of me kicked in and I decided, well, that's enough of that. We've got to set the record straight here. So I then put all of my energies into turning that around. I think I succeeded.
I think it's safe to say you did. But like Mick is asked endlessly and before he's even joined the grid, what about the pressure of the surname? How much of a difference does that make?
Can I advertise another podcaster?
Yeah, I'd love you to.
Because there's a great podcast with Nika on Nico's podcast, Beyond Victory, with Michael Douglas, who of course had got a famous dad. So that's two famous sons talking about the influence of a famous dad. And it's very difficult to say. You're aware that people, you're identified. So you're aware of that when you're very young. So the moment you go, when you're trying to be just like any other kid, you're identified as having a famous dad. And that can kind of tilt any kind of relationship that you have with anybody, because you don't know whether they're interested in you because your dad's famous or whether, you know, there's a genuine kind of relationship there. So it gets a bit complicated. But when you go into the same profession, then of course, inevitably there's going to be this unavoidable comparison. It's quite difficult to get it out of other people's heads. And in some ways you have to kind of go, well, it's not going to come out. You can't control that at all. So it's obvious to everyone that I wore my dad's crash helmet. So I'd already made the decision that I was a continuance, if you like, of the story. I'd carried this thing forward by using the same crash helmet design that he did. So I identified with my dad, and I saw it as a kind of homage to him or some sort of tribute to him in some sense that I was carrying on. And I think that became an asset then. I think that people, once they saw I could do well, that started to go in my favor a bit. I mean, Jack never mentioned his dad. You couldn't get Jack to comment on Gilles Villeneuve hardly at all. And
why do you think?
Well, a different, I mean, his dad died quite, you know, publicly in, my son is saying goodbye. 1 minute, you'll appreciate. Oh. He's at the window.
Is it Ollie?
Very excited about Christmas.
Is it Oliver?
Oliver, yeah.
Oh, bye-bye, yeah, so Oliver.
He's got his red, he's got a lovely red coat on. Oh. It's very Christmassy. And he's at the window and he's, because I know that people listen to this as well, don't they? So you can't see him, but there you are. Bye, see you at Christmas. Yeah.
How lovely. I want to talk more about Ollie later, actually.
Yeah.
Because he's a dude. Yes, right.
Yeah.
Where were we? Jill and Jack. Yeah, why you think... But your dad died in very public circumstances as well.
You know something with Jack, you know... they used to do these videos. They used to sell, this is in the days before YouTube and stuff. And they used to do this, it was a series of videos that were just about crashes. And you used to see them playing in pubs and stuff, and they'd show crashes. And you could have been in a bar somewhere, and they would have been showing Jules Verneuve's accident. Now, you know, we recently had the reaction from the drivers in Bahrain, Sakhir Grand Prix with to Grosjean's accident and the shock that they felt in seeing it replayed. So that can be quite difficult to deal with. You can imagine if Jacques growing up and he was only 8 years old when his dad died. So, you know, I think that was slightly different to my dad in a way. Mm. And he never really got to have any kind of relationship really, 8 years old. So, And I shouldn't really be talking about it because it's his story. You know, it's not, it's just, I mean, but having been teammates with him, we never spoke about these things at all. But so you'd think there would be some common ground because we both had famous racing driver dads, but, you know, you didn't go there. That wasn't part of the, you didn't want to talk about that. So that everyone's different, I guess. You can't generalize about these things.
No, absolutely. And that must have been one of his coping mechanisms. But it is interesting to me how your dad's death and, you know, was able to motivate you and you were able to spurn you on to, and you actually said you wouldn't have gone into it had he lived. I mean, that's
incredible. I think not. I think he would, well, his team would have carried on. So I would have probably been more like Johnny Williams, you know, I'd have been very proud supporter of the team, maybe got a job with the team or something like that. And I don't think I would have had the nerve to kind of say, Dad, what about me? You know, what about me having a go?
But then how did you feel? And again, this is tremendous sadness, I would presume. And again, we can't speak on their behalf, but for Mick, not for his dad, not to be there when he joins the grid in Formula One. How difficult was that for you that your dad wasn't there to witness it in person?
Well, you know, it's difficult having that event happen to anyone in their life, you know, so you in a way you don't think of it that way. You think of it as that being a separate event. I would I have liked my dad? Well, my other son Josh started racing, I kind of went through this experience of being the dad on the sidelines watching him. And I did think to myself, if my dad had been around, how difficult would it have been for him to not get involved? You know, to stand back, because the moment he would have turned up at a racetrack, all the people that work on your son's car are going to be going, oh, crikey, you know, it's Graham Hill. I hope we're doing it. We're not going to screw it up because he could be quite an imposing character. I mean, people liked him, but he was also quite a powerful personality. So you'd never get any buffer. You'd never get this zone where you're kind of not influencing, or he wouldn't have been influencing. So I don't know how it would have worked.
And do you buy into the theory that most boys spend their lives trying to get their dad's approval?
I think that any child wants and needs their parents' approval. I mean, not unquestioning and you know, and not in any way, you know, balanced, but when I realized with Josh that, you know, if I was trying to, what I thought was help him, he didn't want that, because actually what he wanted to do was show me what he could do, not have me tell him what I knew. And so this is where you get into the teaching profession, you know, and the skills of a teacher is to let the child show them what they're capable of and give them the feedback they need to encourage them to keep going in that direction. I think it's very difficult to, you know, any family, your mother, I know, you know, you're very encouraging and supportive person. I've seen that with your children. You give them good, you know, lots of positive feedback in and of themselves, you know, and so they get this self-confidence that they can kind of go out in the world and they'll plow through everything. That's something that's very important. I mean, I don't believe in completely unconditional approval, because you can, if you like, get these egomaniac children.
Yeah.
But you need that to sustain you in Formula One. You know, you need a lot of inner confidence. Someone like Fernando Alonso has not got a glimmer of weakness, has he? I mean, he's just incredible. And Daniel Ricciardo is obviously he's very comfortable with himself. He's a lovely guy, but he's up and he's, you know, and then there's other drivers who seem a little bit, you know, slightly vulnerable, say the wrong thing or whatever. And they're kind of, you know, you put Lewis in that category a little bit. I mean, you know, but he's got this incredible talent that kind of overcomes all of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do we get onto them?
I think talking about the father-son thing, I mean, obviously, and mother-son and mother-daughter and father-daughter, but it's a really interesting dynamic between father and son. And I always wonder this whole nature-nurture thing as well. If you're growing up as the son of a world champion, whether you instinctively are drawn to that because that's all you've known around you, or whether you do have an innate talent because you've inherited it from your parent. And equally, you might go a completely different direction, but feel as if you're kind of swimming upstream a bit, that actually it might be easier to go the same route as your father. And then again, the flip side of that all is the dads who then live vicariously through their sons. And you could argue that about Lance and Lawrence Stroll or Nikita Mazepin and his dad, because they've actually bought teams. They've invested so heavily in their son's future for it to play out. It's just a fascinating dynamic.
It is a difficult question these days, I think, you know, because clearly it was a lot simpler, I think, when my dad was racing, because most of the guys who raced did it against their parents' wishes. They literally, if you look back, and the Lauders, the Hunts, the Stewarts, you know, their parents didn't want them to do it. They wouldn't talk to them. So they were furious that they'd gone off and done whatever they wanted to do. Now you have the opposite, where you have, you know, guys, dads saying, do you know how much I spent on your go-kart? And, you know, and I'm standing around here in the peeing rain. You bloody get out there and win it, you know. And these kids are kind of working for their dads, you know.
So it's very,
you have to be sure it's them who want it. They're driving it.
Thanks so much for listening to In the Pink. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast you've listened to so far. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Check out our Instagram page at in_the_pink. And you get all the details there about how you can win some of those Bose noise cancelling headphones. And join the community. We're all talking about the various guests that we've had on the podcast and who we'd like to see and hear in the next few weeks. So thank you for joining us. Stay with us. Stay healthy. Stay home. Stay connected with Bose.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.